Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this extra special Scary Movie Month episode of F This Movie, because I'm joined by someone very, very special. You have missed him as I have missed him. He is OG F This Movie, and now runs his very own website and blog and YouTube channel called Serial at Midnight. Please welcome Heath Holland. How are you, Heath?
Oh, man, that was a wonderful introduction. It is so great to be here talking about the band POD. I'm so stoked.
I feel so alive.
I feel like I'm in Southtown.
Okay. Is that, I don't know. I was pretty impressed with myself for pulling out "I Feel So Alive" from POD.
Yeah, that was impressive. I can't, and you know what? I'm empty. Like, I'm spent. That's all I got.
What does POD actually stand for?
I think it means Payable on Death, because they were like a Christian new metal band.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Payable on Death.
That's right. That's why I'm here. I bring the POD knowledge.
Welcome to Stained Cast, where we're talking Stained and all bands like Stained.
Saliva.
Oh, Jesus. What a bad time for music.
Puddle of Mud.
Puddle of Mud, there it is. I was like, it's not Mud Honey, they're a good band. Oh, Puddle of Mud, that's right. What was their big hit song? Oh my gosh, we have gone so far off the radar here. What was the big... I'm literally looking it up right now. But how's everything going? Tell us, how's everything going at Serial at Midnight?
Oh, it's going pretty well. For people who do not know, like, I have been working on this thing, serialatmidnight.com, and it's basically just like... it's kind of like a retro culture thing that I got going on. I don't know that I intended it to be that, but it's kind of turning into that. So it's like old movies and music and like especially like retro video games and stuff like that. And it is started in February, and I think it's fine in its way. It's turning into a thing.
I enjoy reading the posts on there. What's like the most recent actual Serial review that you've done?
I think I've only done one, actually. Maybe I've done a few.
I feel like you've done more than one.
I did the cinnamon cereal comparison.
Oh, right.
Video. Right. And I think that might have been the last thing that I did, because I never meant for it to be so literal. And
no,
then people
I know.
Like, you don't talk enough about cereal. I was like, if it's expected, I should probably do more cereal reviews.
I just enjoy... you know, I'm not going to try most of these cereals, so I just like to live vicariously through another person. Puddle of Mud's big hit song that I was thinking of was She Hates Me.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, I probably heard it twice, and then I remembered why I don't listen to Puddle of Mud.
What was that band that was like, Hunter, why are you calling so late? Or why are you calling me here? Who was that?
I don't know what that is.
We're way too far off. Sorry.
Well, I'm super glad that you are here. Tonight we are talking John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, which I think you had suggested because last year we talked about The Fog and had a really cool conversation about that movie. So it's kind of fun to revisit another John Carpenter classic.
Totally. And it's actually visiting it for the first time for me, because this is one of those movies that I was kind of afraid of watching for reasons that we'll get into. So... this was my first time.
This is exciting. I'm even more excited to talk about it now.
There will be no couch. I'm not getting on a couch.
Oh, that's what
anybody
you think.
Anybody listening expecting a couch?
That's what you think. So we're going to talk about Prince.
Handkerchief. What are you doing? Put it down.
Don't mind this. We're going to be talking Prince of Darkness in just a little bit, but I want to remind everyone who's listening, there's still a few weeks left in October, which means we are still doing the Scary Movie Challenge over at fthismovie.com. Every time you watch a scary movie in the month of October, head over to fthismovie.com, look for the Scary Movie Challenge tab at the top of the page, and leave a 7-word review. We're going to be reading some of our favorite 7-word reviews right now. And actually, I will start. Mac McIntyre, who has been watching more movies than almost anyone this October, says of Brain Damage, the Frank Henenlotter movie from 1988, "Nice seeing Eraserhead Baby getting more work."
I haven't seen that movie, but I bet that that's really good.
It's super entertaining. It's a guy with like a giant monster that comes out of his head and eats people's brains. And he talks like kind of like Boris Karloff. It's the most hilarious thing that the little voice on this monster made me laugh every single time he talks. Arrow just put out a really nice Blu-ray of it.
I am sold. Uncle Lou of 10 Cloverfield Lane says TJ Miller really grew as a cinematographer.
And that is one of my favorites. That made me laugh out loud. Jan Peters says of Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Well, I guess it's over now, right?
Mm-hmm. Some people would say so. But it's
hey, not
good,
me.
Good job on that Friday the 13th piece you wrote the other day, by
Thank
the way.
You.
That was awesome.
Thank you. That was...
I was thinking about it. I was like, you know, what is it about it? And you pretty much... Like, you summed up how I felt about it. You're like, I don't know. It's these things, but it's totally comfort food, right?
More than almost anything else. Like, yeah. I'm just those and the Roger Corman Poe cycle. Like, those two things I could just put on any time and feel good about my life.
Totally. Marcus Killerby of Monkey Shines from 1988. Murderous monkeys, we're them and they're us.
I had that one listed too because I love it's a reference to like the Night of the Living Dead remake that Doug mm-hmm. and I always joke about, and I was so mm-hmm. excited to see that work its way into a 7-word review. Good on you, Marcus. I transitioned out of Friday the 13th, the final chapter, right into this review from Mr. Smarty Man of Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning, Unforeseen Twist, Enchiladas Scarier Than Psycho Killers.
Frank Levesque, American Psycho from 2000, starting with The Man in the Mirror.
Very nice.
That was nice.
Oh, I have another. I have a Frank Levesque, right? Was that a Frank Levesque one?
That was, yes.
Yeah, I have another one of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. Only serial killers and podcasters in Chicago.
Oh, it's true. That's actually, it's funny because it's true.
That's right. It just hit me so close to home.
Okay, I'm going to read this one because we might get to talk about this a little bit later. Paul Calvert of Chopping Mall, that synth score is in my head.
Jason Stevens of Prom Night or Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2. That's why we switched to whiteboards, which is a very specific joke, but I appreciate it.
Jason Carlton, The Dark Half, twice the Hutton, twice the fun.
I have one that's very similar from Cade Tucker of The Dark Half. What would make this better? Three Huttons.
A lot of Hutton yeah, love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's see. What do I have next? Let's see. John Hillman Asylum from 1972. Probably least staffed hospital until Halloween 2.
which I will use that to transition right into this review. We did not plan this, guys. Right into this review of Halloween 2 from Jeremy Wickett. The hot tub has a scalding setting, which is true. That is a weird murder in Halloween 2.
Yeah, why does it get so hot?
I don't know.
Like, do they clean their utensils in that thing? Or?
Maybe they clean all the surgical equipment. But yeah, like, Bud gets such a sort of uninteresting death by the hot tub, and he's such a scumbag. And then the woman that he's in the hot tub with, who has been nothing but nice and naked, gets that horrible, horrible burning death in the hot tub. I don't know why... she gets it so much worse than he does. It doesn't seem fair.
I don't know. You know, she showed up in an episode of Knight Rider I was watching. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute. It was like a crossing of two worlds that I wasn't just like.
I
totally
feel like I want to see that episode of Knight Rider now.
You want to see every episode of Knight Rider.
I don't know if that's
it's
true.
Awesome. No, you do. You just don't know it yet.
I do want to see the one with the Halloween 2 nurse.
Shane Golden, Beyond the Gates, a movie that I know you love.
Yes.
Is Crampton, Schlampton, Mo Mampton, Feet by Thamson.
Matt Sollenberger of The Frighteners. Danny Elfman's score contains surprisingly few oompas.
I think this is my last one.
Okay.
Brian Sager of Creepshow. Atkins's upper lip must have been freezing.
only one more for me as well. Kathy says of Get Out, the moral, only date poor white girls.
Oh.
Right? All right. So these were great. Again, please keep it up. If you are one of these lurkers who's been using the Scary Movie Month hashtag on Twitter but not posting your 7-word reviews, this is my opportunity to shame you. Please, please go over to fthismovie.com and participate in the fun. Maybe one of your reviews will get read on the show and you will feel an overwhelming sense of pride and hubris for one day. You'll walk around with your head held high. You'll scoff at your coworkers. Life will be good for just a little while.
Yeah, like makes you virile. If you're impotent, you're no longer impotent. It's like, why would you not?
We have a surprisingly large impotent contingent of our audience, which, by the way, I used to play in a band called Impotent Contingent, and we opened for POD, and we were pretty good. We were
That's pretty amazing.
Good. Yeah, thanks.
We gotta stop now. That's like the best it's going to get.
Heath Holland, have you seen anything scary lately?
I have. I started actually back in September. Now, I haven't written 7-word reviews for these movies that I watched in September because that would be wrong.
Thank you for understanding that, by the way. My wife gets upset with me because I was watching shit on September 30th, and she's like, now, will this count? And I said, no. And she said, why not? I said, well, if you're not going to play fair, why even do it?
Right. I mean, you could talk about it, right? But you can't,
exactly.
You can't count it.
Exactly.
That's not right. All right, so I had my mind like blown by this little this bad little movie called Cellar Dweller from 1988.
Oh yeah.
That is, I freaking love this movie.
It's really fun.
There were two that just completely blew me away. So I was, like, for my birthday, I got some money, so I ordered some of these like Shout Factory / Scream Factory 4-pack movies, and I like some of the ones that stood out were Cellar Dweller and Dungeon Master, which like Dungeon Master might be my favorite thing ever now. But Cellar Dweller was just like, it was the movie. Like I'm going to try to paraphrase the line from Batman, like The Dark Knight, but I don't think I'm going to get it right. It's the movie. It's not the movie I deserve, but it's the movie I needed right then and there. So it's Charles Band, right? He produced it.
Yeah.
And is written by Don Mancini.
Yeah.
Of Child's Play, like all Child's Play,
right?
But he wrote it under pseudonym, so I don't know. It's like, for me, it was just like, you know, we talk about like comfort movies or whatever. It's a guy in a suit, like a guy in a monster, like a rubber monster suit, comic book art, like it's like a 50s kind of, like, you know what, it reminded me of there's an episode of Tales from the Crypt that's kind of similar, but I think came out later, where the guy from
the Harry Anderson one.
Yes, yeah. That's the one. Kind of similar vein. But I don't know. I just like, I really loved it. It's not good, but it's fun.
I thought it was really fun.
Yeah. Sometimes that's what you need.
Yeah.
In fact, most of these movies on my list, not good, but fun.
That's on the same set as the other movies on that set are not great, right? Cause it's Catacombs, which is kind of a drag. And.
Yeah. But Catacombs.
Go ahead.
Oh, wait, no. I'm thinking of something. Catacombs. Yeah. Catacombs was boring.
Is that the one with Contamination 7, though?
I think it is.
And you watched Contamination 7.
I did watch Contamination.
Because you wrote about it on Serial at Midnight, right?
Yeah, I did.
And I saw that, and I was like, motherfucker, I tried to warn you not to watch that movie.
No, wait a minute. I wrote about Catacombs on the site, my site. I wrote about I did the 7-word review.
Oh, okay.
So I actually watched this one off. Yeah. I saved it. I watched okay, I'm getting confused now. I watched Contamination 0.7, right? Is that how we
say
it?
Yeah, I think so.
Contamination and 7/10. Now, I watched that one in October.
Okay.
And it's so bad that it's kind of watchable. Like it's.
Oh, I disagree. I was bummed out by that movie.
Well, so, and you'd already prepared me, though, because you were like, do not watch Contamination 0.7. Seriously, though, do not watch Contamination. So I was like, man, this is going to be terrible. And it was. Okay, so there's a guy who, like, every line he delivers, he delivers like this. And you're like, what, this? I have 7 years of drama training, and this is my big moment to show you what I can do.
It was like anyway. The most boring killer tree movie ever.
Yeah, fair enough.
Also known as Troll 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no actual. Catacombs was also no. That was Troll. Wait, no, that was. oh, this is too much. This is too many worlds colliding. They marketed Catacombs under, maybe it was Catacombs that was Troll 3.
No, Contamination 7 was Troll 3.
Okay, so what was Catacombs marketed in?
I'm not.
No one. See, nobody cares.
Another name for Catacombs. And Catacombs was David Schmoller, who's like a decent director. So I don't know how that movie ended up being kind of boring, but
totally. And he gives a really good commentary on the disc.
Does
too.
He? Okay.
Yeah, it's like it's better than the movie, but he was really going for something. I don't think he hit it, but right. He tried. All right, so I started watching a bunch of stuff on Amazon Prime Video. So The Mutilator from 1984,
sure,
aka Fall Break.
Fall Break, that's the best Fall thing about Break. That movie.
It's got like this jamming Kenny Loggins song. It's not Kenny Loggins, but it could be. They're like Fall Break. There, it's then it turns into a slasher movie with like this super jaunty, happy song about these kids going on a fall break.
Yep.
I don't know. I thought that was really fun though. I liked it a lot. I don't have a ton to say about it, but.
No, there's not much to say about it, really. It's one of those movies that I think was made by somebody who'd never made a movie before. They just got some money and decided to invest it in a slasher movie. And so they made, you know, The Mutilator and possibly didn't make anything after that.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's people in there that's like, you can tell they're not actors either. It's just like friends. It's like Evil Dead, but way worse.
But with a better pop song.
That's right. And from there, I was motivated to watch Death Spa from 1989.
Yes.
Which has Merritt Buttrick from David Marcus from Star Trek 2 and 3.
Yeah.
As a bad guy. I mean, I don't like it's so stupid, but it's fun.
Oh, yeah. No, I really enjoy Death Spa. I won't make a case that it's a good movie, but it's crazy entertaining. And it's got Ken Foray, too, right?
Yeah, totally. Totally yeah. Does. Yeah. Now I'm, you know, like the theme of what I'm bringing to the table is that none of this is good.
Yeah,
I'm just looking for,
it's
at this
fun.
Point, I'm just looking for a good time. Right. It's like, yeah. You heard this thing about like exploitation movies, like back in January. And that's kind of where I'm at. Just like, you know, I've seen a lot of movies. I've seen a lot of good movies. I just want to have a good time.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at. I'm just like, show me something fun. Show me people working out and they're being killed by their exercise equipment. That's what I want. That's not too much to ask.
That movie is bananas.
After that, I watched Chopping Mall.
Okay.
The first time.
Oh, nice.
Love Chopping Mall.
Yeah, super fun.
B-Crams.
So, B-Crams, Kelly Maroney.
Crams. Yep.
Yeah.
Chopping Mall, murder by robots that are not Daleks, but could be.
A.K.A. Killbots.
That's right.
That was the original title for the movie, and I believe it's still the best Jim Wynorski movie. I think most of his movies end up being pretty unwatchable, but that one is a lot of fun. It helps that it's like 70 minutes long.
Yeah, yeah. You get in and you get out.
It, right.
It delivers. There's some explosions. There's people falling and going like, ah, and then credits. And
yeah.
Everybody's happy.
Well, it's weird because it has, you know, one of the all-time great movie head explosions. Like for a movie that's really cheaply made, I still am very impressed by that effect because I've watched it a bunch of times and I still can't quite see the seams of it. And then from there, it kind of like, I won't say it falls apart, but none of the deaths are as interesting or compelling. I won't say who, but someone gets set on fire, right? So we have the head explosion, we have the person set on fire, and then everything else is just kind of like, oh, this person gets shot, this person falls down. Like, I feel like the back half of the movie isn't as exciting or entertaining as the first half.
I'm going to say you're probably right, but I didn't notice that when I watched it. I was just shoving popcorn in my face and laughing like a simpleton. I watched The Nest from 1988, which is like this bug horror movie.
I think I've seen it, but I don't know if I have.
It's not great. It's just one of those like 80s practical effects. Like there's just lots of like rubber bugs and there's real bugs in it too, but I don't know. Like I don't know how to sell it other than like, hey, it's bug horror. Again, not good.
No.
But
the cover rings a bell, but I feel like I'm confusing it with The Nesting.
Yeah, you probably are.
All right.
Because that that's a much like that's a better movie, right?
Oh, okay. I don't know. I don't remember. But, I know I've seen one of these. I just don't know which one.
Yeah, and I've seen The Nest, and you know what? You're fine.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Good to know.
Okay, so I got two more.
All right.
So Billy Club. I watched this movie on Amazon Prime called Billy Club.
I have always been like, do I pull the trigger? Do I pull the trigger? And then I saw your 7-word review and realized maybe I shouldn't.
It's tricky because it's – okay, so it's not good. Not good in the way that the other movies that we've talked about aren't good. Like it's not – like other movies that we've talked about, you're like, well, they're cheap, they're 80s, they're flashy, they're like music videos with blood. That's not what this is. This is their it's so it's like a throwback slasher movie, but they've added these like psychological elements, and there's like a guy who that might be kind of a spoiler, but so there's a guy who's like struggling with his sexuality, so it's kind of edgy too. But I can tell that they were really trying to do something. Like I don't think they play it for laughs as much as they should. It's like a Wisconsin movie. Like they made it in, it's these guys from Wisconsin and this girl, and they made it in Wisconsin for apparently like $1.57. Like it looks real cheap. Like shot on iPhone cheap, which I don't think it was, but it just looks really cheap. But I mean, so the cover art is great, and that's like the cover art to the, like the poster draws you in. And I like the idea of it's a baseball themed slasher, right? Which we don't have that, so they have a new idea, but it just doesn't get anywhere. Like it doesn't go anywhere. And then they try to have like an edgy ending that's a little kind of sort of a twist. It just doesn't work. But like it's one of these where like, well, like, well, you tried, right? Yeah. Like I gotta give you some credit for really trying. You did some things that nobody's done before. I just wish you'd done it better.
You might have talked me into watching it.
Yeah, I think maybe you should.
Yeah,
because at least then it won't just be me.
Well, I'm always looking for like a legit modern slasher that isn't like a slasher in air quotes, which is what I feel like we get most of when people do slashers now. It's very much sort of a, isn't this like an 80s movie? Do you know what I mean? And it's a lot of times kind of played for laughs, like you said, which Billy Club isn't really doing. So.
Right.
I don't know. I'm probably going to check it out.
Yeah, if you do, I want to know what you think. Because
absolutely.
It's not good, but man, they sure did try.
Yeah.
You know, I actually have two more. I'll go through one of them quick. So I watched Twice Told Tales, the Vincent Price movie.
Yeah.
It's not one of those Edgar Allan Poe Corman movies, but it, like, I always thought it was, or like it thinks it is too. Like they're clearly ripping off the Corman model.
Well, these are what? Robert Louis Stevenson stories? No.
Nathaniel Hawthorne.
I don't know why I said Robert Louis Stevenson. Nathaniel Hawthorne, that's
right. It was the same guy, right?
I believe so. He wrote...
It's a pseudonym.
It's sort of his Richard Bachman.
That's right. Totally. Yeah, it was like his, you know, like the more like crowd-pleasing stuff.
Right.
Like, well, yeah. I keep thinking that I'd seen this movie because I always get this confused with Tales of Terror, which is... also from like the same time period, and it has Tales in the title, and I'm like, oh, I've seen that, but I haven't. I've seen Tales of Terror. I haven't seen Twice Told Tales.
Tales of Terror is awesome, and I love it, and it's like one of my favorite anthologies. And Twice Told Tales, I've only seen once, and I didn't love it because I remember it being super long. But the confusion for me was always that like the Vincent Price box set, I think they came on the same disc maybe. That old DVD box that MGM maybe put out. I think both of those anthologies were like on the same disc. So that may be
the confusion.
Is that
the one that was like in a metallic cover?
Maybe.
Okay. Like back in the day. Like,
yeah,
like
yeah,
not
yeah.
Not the Scream Factory.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they were. I know what you're talking about. Yes. I think you're right.
Okay.
It's not great. Like it's, but no. I don't know. Like it's hard to criticize anything that Vincent Price has done because he's so just like himself in all of these things. Two out of the three. I liked two out of the three of the stories. One of them I liked more than the other one, but I'm going to give a pass to two out of the three stories. But they're 2 hours. The movie's 2 hours.
Yeah,
so
it's
you're getting
way
like,
too long.
Exactly. You get like 40-minute anthology stories, which is too – I mean, that's too long.
Yeah.
But that's okay. And then finally, Blood Rage. From
oh, yes.
Blood Rage. And I know you had posted something on Twitter about it. I freaking love Blood Rage. so good.
It's really fun.
And by so good, I mean it's so satisfying.
Yeah, that was our Scary Movie Month commentary this year. So
that's right.
Make sure you listen to it now with the commentary, because we talk a lot about Louise Lasser's performance.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're not an advocate of, like, irony, right? Like, you approach these things pretty sincerely, right? And then you just, like...
Yeah, I mean, we definitely are, like, making jokes and stuff about the movie, but there's nothing ironic about my enjoyment of the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's like, what I was going to say. Like, yeah. You do all these commentaries, but it never feels smug. Yeah, that's
no, they're, with the exception, I don't love Maximum Overdrive. That's really the only one we've ever done a commentary for which I don't have a great deal of affection. Everything else.
But you do love Stephen King.
So. I do love Stephen King, but every other movie we've ever done is a movie that I genuinely really like and enjoy. And so it's always coming from a place of affection and, hey, isn't this fun? Not look how stupid this is, you know?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's what I love about it. I'm a fan of this movie. Like, it's so bad, but it's fun. And the synthesizer score is maybe the most memorable synthesizer score I can think of. Like, it's just
really,
like, I love it.
Amazing effects too. That's one of the things we talk about a lot on the commentary for a movie that's, you know, made on the cheap and not super well known. The gore effects are shockingly effective and well done.
Yeah, like that bisection.
Oh, like, my gosh, that's like nightmarish.
Like, how do people come up with, like, you have no money, right? Like, well, we're gonna do a bisection. Yeah. So just stuff some jeans with some newspaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some shoes on it, and we're just going to cover in blood.
The effects designer was a guy, I believe, named Ed French, and he plays the guy whose head ends up dangling in the extension cords.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who's on the date, that's him. So that's who you should thank. Is that everything?
That's everything. Yeah. Okay. What have you seen?
Let's see. I saw a newish movie. I don't even know that I would totally call it horror, but it's called MFA, which is not a great title. It's sort of a rape revenge film, so maybe it fits better into like the exploitation category. It's a weird time to be watching this movie because of everything that's going on in the news and all of the conversation on social media. In some ways, it's more relevant than ever. In others, I think it makes it harder to watch, which, again, I know I can say coming from my place of, you know, white cis male privilege, because any woman who's listening is like, oh, was it hard to watch? Imagine living it every day. So please understand that that is not lost on me. It's a very well-made movie. It's directed by a woman. It's written by a woman, not the same woman. And so I think that gives it a different perspective, because I feel like so many of these rape revenge movies are coming from a male point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very interesting. There's a scene in which a character tries to talk to a doctor, a counselor. I think it's a counselor, about what had happened to her. And it's sort of as repellent as the scene that depicts the rape in very different ways. It's like she's being victimized twice. And that scene, you know, affected me so much on watching it now, because, again, everyone's talking about not being listened to, not being believed, not being able to talk about it because they know they won't be believed. And this scene really depicted that in such a realistic way. It's a very well-made movie. I'll recommend it primarily for the lead performance by an actress named Francesca Eastwood, who, of course, is the daughter of Clint Eastwood and Frances Fisher. And she looks so much like Frances Fisher. It's uncanny. Did you happen to see a Western that came out maybe last year called Angels and Outlaws?
No, I have not.
Was it called Angels and Outlaws? I think it was called Angels and Outlaws. It's really good and worth seeing. Ben Browder is in it from Farscape, and Chad Michael Murray, who is surprisingly decent. But that was the first movie I ever saw Francesca Eastwood in, and Frances Fisher actually plays her mom, which obviously is brilliant casting. she's so, so, so good and is basically in every scene of this movie. And even if I didn't think the rest of the movie was good, which I do, I would recommend it just for her performance because she's incredible.
Well, I got to check it out.
Yeah, it's a newer film, so it's like on streaming and VOD and iTunes and stuff right now.
Okay.
This weekend, I did sort of a double feature, both inspired by the most recent episode of Pure Cinema, where they were doing horror triple features. They mentioned a bunch of different titles, and all of them, I was like, oh, I need to rewatch that. Oh, now I feel like watching that. So two of the movies that I watched, which I realized would make a really good double feature, are Popcorn and Bad Dreams. Are you a fan of either or both of these movies?
I'm aware of both of them. I've seen neither.
Okay. They're both fun, and the reason I think they would make a good double feature is because they both center around a main female character who has a past being part of like a cult, sort of, and has escaped that. And Bad Dreams is written and directed by Andrew Fleming, who did The Craft, which we just did a podcast on last week, and seems inspired by A Nightmare on Elm Street, where they're sort of trying to cash in on the success of that movie, even though I think it's a pretty different movie. But Jennifer Rubin from Dream Warriors plays the lead in this one, and it takes place inside of a hospital for sort of the emotionally disturbed, and the spirit of this cult leader played by Richard Lynch, who is one of the great creeps in movie history, has returned and, you know, is committing murders and stuff. It's, again, it's like 80 minutes and has some great scenes and some good, you know, Bruce Abbott from Reanimator is in there and Dean Cameron from Summer School is in there and E.G. Daly shows up. So it's fun. And then Popcorn, I hadn't seen in years, and I had bought that Synapse Blu-ray that had been delayed for so long. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. It's not great. I'm a huge Jill Sholin fan, so of course I'm going to enjoy it. And I like a horror movie that's set at a movie theater. But it's just such a weird movie because it had multiple directors, like about three different directors. It was all shot in Jamaica. The whole movie seems to be dubbed like via ADR. And there's just a weird vibe to it. But it's fun. I mean, it's not a movie I'll really like go to the mat for and say, oh man, Popcorn is so great, but it's fun. And I think it would play well on a double bill with Bad Dreams.
Okay. So you're saying that Popcorn is so great.
Correct. Yeah. It's my favorite movie of the month so far and cracks into my top five horror movies of all time.
Okay. Awesome.
And then the last thing I'll bring up is that I revisited Friday the 13th part 2 when I was writing that article, I was like, well, now I feel like watching Friday the 13th movies. And I had just watched the first one, I think, on actual Friday the 13th or possibly the night before. So I revisited part 2, and part 2 is so good. Like, I want to love part 1 a little bit more than I do. I just think the second half drags in a way that it's not supposed to. And part 2, I just think, is so much better because Steve Miner is just a better director than Sean Cunningham. I think the characters are more likable. I think it has my favorite group of counselors and actors. You know, they're just pretty much all likable and fun to be around. I think, you know, it's the first appearance of Jason. And while I'll give the first movie the advantage of, hey, it's sort of a mystery, even though it's not really, there's just something that is more effective about it being Jason, and he's, you know, it's Baghead Jason. He's really like relentless and scary in a way that the unseen killer in the first movie is not, you know. And Amy Steele is just one of the great final girls of all time. So part 2 is, let's see, it might be my second favorite in the series.
Okay.
I think Final Chapter is still number 1. So I think it goes 4-2, and then I don't know, maybe 3.
Did you build monster masks when you were a kid?
I did not, but if I could have, I would have. So obviously there's some connection to Tommy Jarvis.
Yeah. Sweet. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I need to revisit. I had planned to revisit those this month. Maybe I still will. 'Cause I bought them all on Blu-ray, like after last Scary Movie month.
Okay.
Not all of them, because, you know, like 7 and 8 are like impossible to find now. I didn't buy that set that's going for like $500 on eBay now. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, and I think that's crazy because I deliberately chose not to buy that set because it had the wrong versions of certain movies.
Also, it was scratching the discs when you took them out.
Right. It had the R-rated Jason Goes to Hell.
Uh-huh.
And I think the unrated one is the only one to watch. So I chose not to buy it, and now it's like highly sought after.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I need to watch those again because it's been too long. I think I watched them like 3, maybe it's probably 4 years ago was the last time.
Oh yeah. I love it. Need to.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I need to check in with my friends like you've checked in with yours.
I did just order the Waxwork Records. Like, I cannot get into this whole horror soundtracks on vinyl thing. I love it in theory, but it's an expensive habit, and I just can't have another thing that I'm collecting.
Yeah.
But I did order the... They just are now putting out the Final Chapter score on vinyl, and I did order it because I do love the music for those movies, so... I may just collect Friday the 13th scores.
Do you have a turntable?
I do, yeah.
Okay. I know at one point we'd had a conversation about Kiss's Destroyer.
Yes.
Which is awesome. And you didn't have a turntable. It's like, dude, you got to pick that up. And you're like, I don't have anything to play it on. So I'm happy to hear that you have a turntable and that yes. You are doing the whole – now here's – I don't want to worry you, but the problem with new vinyl now is that it's made to much different specifications and it'll skip all over the place. Cause it's not like colored vinyl and stuff. It's like blood splattered. Vinyl.
Yeah. That's what these are, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope it's fine. I'm sure it'll be fine.
it's not going to play. Be... That's what you're telling me.
I don't know. They have problems. They skip and stuff. But...
No, for crying out loud.
Hey, you just hold it and caress it. And
I think that's what I'm going to do. That's what it's
smell
for,
it.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Maybe just, lick it? I don't know.
I might. I'm going to just sleep with it. I'm really trying not to, like, collect records because I just can't. I mean, I found a few, like, used soundtracks for, like, $1 or $2 at a half-price books. Rob DiCristino very generously sent me the Streets of Fire soundtrack on vinyl, so I play that
awesome.
All the time. Yeah, right. But yeah, I just can't get into to buying all the records because it's too expensive.
You know, now it's going to cassettes. Like, that's the next level.
What?
Is cassettes. Yeah, that totally is.
Is that really happening?
It is. I actually have a video coming out this week about cassettes on the YouTube thing, but it's not about like new cassettes or like collectible cassettes, but cassettes are like, they're coming back. Like, not in, okay, so it's probably.
It's a bad way to listen to stuff.
Yeah, it is. I think it's, you know, we just live in a world now where people who are our age like miss the tangibility of certain things. Cassettes sound not great. It is the worst way to listen to something, but they are totally coming back. Like, that's the net. Like, okay, it's a hipster thing probably. So somebody's going to be like, well, I bought the, you know, the Friday the 13th Final Chapter soundtrack on vinyl. And somebody's like, well, I bought it on cassette.
Oh, God. Well, let me know when that comes back in, because I think I still have my original Ghostbusters soundtrack on cassette, which was like the only music I owned as a child, was the original Ghostbusters cassette. And so hopefully that's a collector's item.
Yeah, it's probably worth like 75 cents. That's awesome.
I'm going to hang on to it till it's $1.
Sweet.
All right, let's talk about Prince of Darkness. I'm super excited because I forgot that this was your first time seeing it. So I, you know, saw this movie probably around the time it first hit VHS, which means I would have been like 10 years old, and will admit it went completely over my head. I just was like, what? This movie's kind of boring. Why is the bad guy a green liquid? What's happening? And I would revisit it every few years, and I remember they showed it at one of the 24-hour massacres mm-hmm. in Chicago a couple years ago. And, you know, they showed it at like 6 a.m., which maybe wasn't the best time to slot it because you're so tired and the movie's pretty talky and pretty slow. Like, I don't know what would be a great time to show it, but I don't feel like it was that time. So I'm bummed out because I got to see a print of it on the big screen, but I barely remember the experience. But it has, over time, become one of those movies that I'm drawn to again and again and again. Like, I want to keep going back to it. And it's, I would say now, one of my favorite John Carpenter movies. There's just something about the vibe of it. I did not realize that there was an Alice Cooper song called Prince of Darkness. So just before this Skype call, I was jamming out to it. I don't love it, but I only heard it once. Maybe I need to live with it a little bit longer. But
yeah, live with it a little bit. It's on Raise Your Fist and Yell. It was co-written by Kip Winger.
Look at you. She's with all the, 17. Yeah. How gross is that fucking song?
Yeah, mom, what is it? Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me.
Like, arrest that man. I don't care how handsome he is. Yeah, I did not realize that Kip Winger co-wrote that bad boy.
Yep.
I need to listen to it again.
I like that song. I think it's all right.
It's no He's Back, the Man Behind the Mask. I guess that's what
can be, really? I mean, that is one of my favorites. And if you go see him live, like, he still performs it because he knows, like, it's one of the best ones.
Yeah, I can't get over it. Like, I have this Halloween mix that I've been driving around to, and I do love the song, but every time it gets to that lyric, you're deep in love, but you're deeper in the woods. I'm like, oh, dear, that is embarrassing.
I don't understand the problem. You're deep in the woods. Your balls deep in the woods. I don't understand. Like, what's so embarrassing about that?
Oh, you're deep in love, but you're deeper in the woods. Anyway, so this is now, I would say, one of my favorite Carpenter movies. Now, again, that is a constantly rotating list because he's a guy with so many great movies. But this is one that I return to more than even, like, Assault on Precinct 13, which I love. I'm weirdly drawn back to this one again and again. There's something about the way that it makes me feel. But this was your first time seeing it, so what are your initial reactions?
Well, you know, I'm still kind of working through it.
It's a lot to work through.
Well, and I had, like, this irrational wariness of this movie too, because, like, Lord, I don't even want to talk about it, but, like, the religious background, and, like, I don't even know where it came from. Like, I don't know if I'd seen something somewhere. I was like, well, you know, that movie's about the devil and the end of the world, and, like, yeah, I guess it is, but it's also kind of goofy and, like, not really, I don't know, like, I don't know. See, okay, so there's John Carpenter movies that I haven't seen still. Like, it's weird because I've seen Halloween, like, a ton of times. And then I've seen, you know, like, They Live, Thing, Escape from New York. Like, yeah. Like, I'm so familiar with, like, half of his work. And then there's other stuff that's just not on my radar at all. And this was one of those that, like, I've never seen Assault on Precinct 13. I've never seen In the Mouth of Madness, which I guess is the third of his, like, apocalyptic trilogy. So it's like The Thing, this movie, and then In the Mouth of Madness.
Yes, In the Mouth of Madness is awesome, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I got to do it. I just got to pull the trigger on some of this stuff.
Yes.
So I guess my initial reaction to this is, like, I don't understand why I was so freaked out by this movie, or the idea of this movie. It seems more like an exercise in atmosphere and in... I don't even want to say themes because I don't know that it has a theme other than maybe just, like, fear of, see, it seems like there's, like, a religious background to this, but I don't really think there is. Like, I know that's got religious imagery in it and, like, a religious, basis, but it's a pretty goofy one, right? Like, so let me, can we talk about, I'm not going to spoil anything, but, like,
no, you can spoil stuff. It's a 30-year-old movie.
So they're like, okay, so Jesus Christ was an extraterrestrial sent here from another planet to warn us about the anti-God who comes from anti-matter. And I'm like, do what now? Like, it just doesn't make sense, right? It was like, okay, so what is anti-matter? And then there's, like, an anti-God from anti-matter. And then Jesus is an alien. Like, okay, okay. And, like, 10 years ago, probably, I'd be like, excuse me? But now I'm just like, well, that's weird. Like, not, like, just, like, from a story point of view, I'm like, antimatter? So he's like, from antimatter? But I don't know. Like, as I live with it, it's probably, like, it's fine, right? Like, it kind of works.
Well, I think the, I'm with you in that I don't, I've seen it, you know, a bunch of times now, and I rarely, if ever, try to make actual sense of a lot of what is talked about. It's a movie that I just sort of let work on me. Because I'm sure somebody smarter than me would say something like, yeah, all that stuff about antimatter and atomic theory, that's all actually, you know, pretty sound science, or maybe it's ridiculous science. I have no idea. To some people, that stuff probably makes sense. I obviously am never going to wrap my head around it. But I am fascinated by the idea that Carpenter, you know, he's such a sort of pragmatic, really kind of nihilistic personality. And so he takes these religious concepts like Jesus, like Satan, or evil, and then explores them sort of through physics and science. You know, he won't sort of confront them on a faith level, even though there are some some ideas about faith, and Donald Pleasance obviously is sort of representing one side of that equation in this movie, but most of it is approaching these concepts scientifically, which I've never really seen in a movie. And so I'm kind of fascinated by that, even if I don't think all that stuff totally works in my brain. I'm so fascinated by the idea that he attempted it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's definitely like new for him, at least. Like, I don't think he'd done anything like that. And I read on the internet, which is never wrong, that he wanted to make something that was like, he saw horror repeating itself, and he wanted to introduce something new, some new fear to the genre. And he does. And maybe I'm looking at it too analytically, which you can't really do with movies like this. Just to be honest, like, I understand the intangibility of a spiritual belief, but I also understand the tangibility of science. And it seems weird to mix like hard science, like metaphysics, with intangible things like religion and like a spiritual belief. But maybe that's why he did it, you know, because the two things are diametrically opposed to each other.
I think so. And I honestly think that he's not a... I don't know if he's ever self-described as an atheist or as an agnostic, but I think there's a part of Carpenter that is looking to take the piss out of religion to some degree. Even if you just look at the way Donald Pleasance is essentially portrayed in the film. And so I think one way to do that is to say, well, none of this faith stuff really means anything because it's all actually hard science, and so you can only approach it rationally and sort of with a secular mindset, you know. And I remember one thing I've said about this movie before, so I apologize for repeating myself, but I feel like it really crystallized in my brain during that 6 a.m. screening at the massacre, that one of my issues with the movie, which I've since gotten over, is that he's working with such big ideas, and he doesn't really have a way to express a lot of those ideas visually, because it's a really hard thing to do. It reminds me of the movie Dogma, the Kevin Smith movie, where Kevin Smith has all these ideas about religion and different Catholic beliefs and has no way to actually visualize them or express them through imagery or even through story. So he just has characters standing around explaining concepts to each other. And that's a lot of this movie too, where Victor Wong is just explaining things to other characters so that we in the audience get it. And so that stuff, you know, doesn't work as well for me. But where I think the movie really excels, I think, and I may be alone in this, I think this is John Carpenter's scariest movie.
What?
I do. I think when it is working on that level, when it's trying, you know, because it's weird. He's made these movies that are so visceral. You know, Halloween just works on our lizard brain. It just scares us because of its construction. It doesn't ask us to necessarily buy into anything ideologically. It's just playing on all of our nerves, right? And he had done that a couple of times. And so then, as you said, he's trying to do something different. So he's sort of trying to scare us with ideas, but I don't think that totally works in Prince of Darkness. And I don't know if it's because he doesn't trust those ideas to do the job or if he just can't help himself. But I think he ends up making a movie that, in addition to presenting all these ideas, is very viscerally scary. And I think there are sequences in this movie that are as intense as anything he has done. I'm thinking of like when Dennis Dunn is trapped in that closet and he's trying to get out. And there, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's one of the scariest scenes he's ever put together.
I'm just surprised. Like, you know, we all respond to different things. This is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because like for me, like I think The Fog is a lot scarier than this, just as on a suspenseful level.
Okay.
But again, like that's really cool though. Like I'm not putting it down at all. Like that's awesome that you respond to it in that way. I don't even know. Like, so what I'm trying to think like how to couch this question. So is it just the way that it's structured and the scenes and the way that the horror is built with like on a situational basis, like where people are and what's coming for them? Or is it the overall sense of impending doom? Or is it all of that together that really works on you?
Yeah, I think this movie does dread better than any of his other movies, because I think there's the immediate dread of what's building outside, what's now building in the church. And then I think there's a sort of macro dread, which was a band that I was in right before something impotence. I can't remember what the stupid joke was. So anyway, macro dread of this idea of, you know, Satan essentially trying to cross over, and that the end of the world is coming. And I just think the way that all of that builds and the way that all of the scientists in the church slowly sort of are taken over in a lot of ways. I wrote a piece about this movie for its 30th anniversary over at Daily Dead. And one of the things that I talked about was how this feels in many ways like John Carpenter's greatest hits, in that we have sort of the siege movie that is Assault on Precinct 13, which is, hey, we're trapped inside this thing and people are trying to get in. It has a bunch of his stock company of actors, and that it is once again about the evil that hides in plain sight, the way that the thing disguises itself and looks like people, the way that they live, they disguise themselves and look at people. Even Starman takes an alien and makes it look like Jeff Bridges. And in this movie, you know, each of the scientists is essentially taken over by this liquid that sort of zombifies them or turns them into demons or whatever. And the way that's handled, I just think there's a sense of dread in this movie that is unlike almost anything else he's done. And I think there's a bleakness to it. And, you know, The Thing is very bleak. And it, really, I guess all of his apocalypse movies, because In the Mouth of Madness is very bleak too. And I won't say this is a humorless movie, because there are some running jokes that are kind of funny. But it's not, you know, he's never trying to relieve the tension with a joke. He just lets it build and build and build. And there's something very adult about the scares. That this feels more like a horror movie that is made for grownups, which is maybe why as a kid it kind of went over my head, because I'm looking for something a little bit more energetic, a little more fun. And Prince of Darkness isn't really a fun movie. It's just intense and bleak to me.
Yeah, this is so interesting, because we had we had a completely different viewing. Like I thought that I was going to be in your camp and be like, you know, this movie is really intense. It kind of freaked me out. I actually have a note here: intentionally funny or unintentionally funny?
Okay,
because I think it's so over the top, it's corny. Okay, so like. Now I don't even know how to continue this conversation without I'm not trying to dismantle anything that you feel, because it's totally valid, but like I just don't know how to approach. Okay, so like these people are like running around like vomiting water like on people, right? And it's so like, to me it was so funny. Like, is that's just me? Like, that's not funny?
I've never found it funny.
I'm just a sick bastard.
Maybe, okay. Maybe.
I thought Snowpiercer might have been a black comedy, so I think it might be me. Yeah, okay, so I don't even know where to go.
I don't know. Thrilled. This is it's usually the other way around where I'm like, oh, what? Okay. I love the score. This is one of my favorite Carpenter scores. I love the widescreen photography from Gary Kibbe. Like, I recognize that not everything works. I don't think I even think, you know, Alice Cooper, your boy, as this homeless dude outside who's sort of leading the charge of evil zombies that are gathering. I think it was a little bit of a miscalculation to cast Alice Cooper because every time we see him, we're pulled out of the movie momentarily.
Oh, it's Alice Cooper.
Exactly.
Right?
Because it's stunt casting that smacks of stunt casting.
And his song is playing in the scene that he's in, right?
Yeah,
so it's like,
oh, the song that he co-wrote with Kip Winger. Are you talking about that one?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm familiar with it. I think the cast is uneven. Like, Dennis Dunn is a lot of fun. Victor Wong is great as always. Donald Pleasance, I kind of like how he's playing a part. And it's like you can watch it two ways. You could say, yeah, he's being sincere and he believes that he's the hero in this movie. Or you could watch it as I do and think that Donald Pleasance's performance is very much a critique of Catholicism. Which is how I've always seen it. But I think Jameson Parker, who plays the lead, is like...
Oh, you mean the guy from Simon and Simon?
It's sort of a JV Tom Atkins.
I was waiting for you to say it. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've never watched Simon and Simon. I don't know. I remember it existing, but like I never watched Simon and Simon. So my only experience with Jameson Parker is from Prince of Darkness. And I just don't... I think he's kind of white bread.
He's no Atkins, that's for sure.
Yeah, I kind of wish there was a stronger actor in the lead. Having said that, I really love Lisa Blount as his sort of romantic counterpart, and she's an actor who I wish had a lot more success. I mean, I know she acted a lot and she's in a lot of stuff. She's in like Cut and Run and she's in a handful of other stuff. I just think she's really, really good, and I wish she had done more stuff. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I really like her in this movie.
Yeah, I like the cast. I don't think there's any real standout as far as like, oh, well, this is such a like, I don't know how I feel about Donald Pleasance, to be honest with you. So I saw an episode of Columbo that he was in. I don't know if you've ever seen this episode of Columbo, but he's like a wine enthusiast who is losing his company to his spoiled brother, and he kills him, of course, because the Columbos always end up, they begin with the murder, and then you have to watch the lieutenant figure it out. And so it's actually the only thing I've ever seen him in where I felt like he was convincing and not like way just like either too big or too eccentric for whatever he was doing.
Okay.
So I don't know how I feel about him. Even in Halloween, and it was like, I shot him 6 times. This is so big, right? It's just like, but
that's still, by the way, like one of my favorite, I think it was a 7-word review that you did that had something to do with shooting him 6 times, which, by the way, your Pleasance was on point. I wish I could remember the exact wording, but like in the 7 years we've been doing this, that is one that I still remember. Something about Donald Pleasance shooting Michael Myers 6 times. And it came from you.
You're sure?
I'm positive.
Of course you're sure. You have like a steel trap. I don't remember it. I don't remember that at all. I have to go look it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, like I don't know that there's any standout cast member, but I don't know. Like, okay, so I got to start backpedaling here because it sounds like I'm criticizing the movie. I like this movie. Like, I think this is I think it's a fun movie. I kind of do think it's a fun movie. Like, it's so weird that I come from like this strict religious background and you come from a different background, and like you had this like response to this movie, and I'm just like, it's fun if you got an hour and a half to kill, you know? It's like we watched The Thing not long ago. Like, I showed it to my wife for the first time.
Yeah.
And you could have heard a pin drop because it was like freaking her out and it was kind of freaking me out. And I've seen it before. So I like, but still, like, it's just such an exercise in like suspense and like you don't know who's what and what's going on. And so, like I say that to say, like, this movie, like, I got none of that from this movie. None of it. It's just so fascinating that. Like, I'm kind of like, what's wrong with me? Like, why didn't I respond?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, there's certainly no, there's not the sense of mistrust in Prince of Darkness because Carpenter never disguises who has been taken over. We usually see it happen as opposed to The Thing where we're constantly left to wonder, is this person who he says he is or is this person the thing? But there's just something about, you know, it's almost similar to something like Day of the Dead or like some of Romero's darker, more bleak zombie movies. There's a feeling of hopelessness that gets worse and worse as the film goes on and as each character sort of is taken over by this monster. And then when we get into the end where, you know, Lisa Blount essentially sacrifices herself to save the world and Jameson Parker has that last cheap jump scare, but it goes out on that feeling of like where your heart's beating a little bit fast and you're like, oh fuck. So I don't think he really lets up on that tension. So maybe it's that feeling of hopelessness that works on me. It's not tension necessarily, although I do think that scene with Dennis Dunn trapped in the closet is pretty tense, and some of that has to do, I think, with just his performance. But I can't remember the actress's name, you know, the one who sits up in the bed whose face is all fucked up, like all that stuff I think works so well.
It does. And it's creepy, and it's like great practical effects makeup too, like that. It's hard to look at because it's so well done. It does work. Like, what do you think about the guy? It's gonna sound like I'm taking a dump on this again, but I'm not. So what do you think about the guy who comes and he's like outside the window and he sounds like he's underwater and he's like and then like his arms turn into bugs and stuff and it's like not funny.
No,
not funny.
I don't think so. No.
What's wrong with me?
I don't know. Because I'm fascinated because to me, as I was watching this and as I was thinking about, okay, I'm going to talk to Heath about this and we're going to record this podcast, I was like, you know what? This is my Event Horizon. Like, which isn't to say that it's a movie that scares me because of something in my, you know, that was the episode that I think that you were referencing where you said no couch. That there's something that's hardwired into you that makes you respond to Event Horizon. And I don't think that's the case with me and Prince of Darkness, but I just think Prince of Darkness is trying to do a lot of the same things that – I'm sorry, Event Horizon is trying to do a lot of the same things that Prince of Darkness does in terms of being very intense, in terms of being mostly humorless as far as I'm concerned. I didn't realize you watched this as a comedy. And in terms of sort of exploring these ideas of the unknowable evil that is making itself known, that is manifesting itself, you know, in particular through one character, Sam Neill in Event Horizon and the blonde woman whose name I can't remember in Prince of Darkness. And so for me, in terms of exploring these ideas, Prince of Darkness is a way more effective movie than Event Horizon, but I know you're more of an Event Horizon man.
I wonder if I would be now. So this is what, two years ago?
Yeah,
3 years ago?
Yeah, it was a while ago.
I wonder if I would be now, because I don't know. Like,
you would probably just find it hilarious, right?
It's just so funny. Sam Neill is just like cutting glances at the camera the whole time. He's just like winking. And then, like, you know, people are getting flayed, and he's like, da-na-na, da-na, da-na. Yeah, man. No, I don't know. I wonder if I would have that reaction now. I am seriously wondering if I'm somehow broken, because this movie did not have that effect on me. And I wish it did. Like, I wish it had freaked me out. Like, I feel like this is okay, so did They Live come before this or after this?
It was the following year.
Okay. So, like, that movie's kind of a comedy. Like, that's got lighthearted elements to it.
Yes.
See, I just thought they're like, you know, maybe John Carpenter's in like in this period in his career, he's just kind of lightening up. He did Big Trouble in Little China. What year was Starman? That was before that, right? So he's just kind of, yeah, I was just like, ah, oh, you know, he's like doing doing lighter fare. But I think I'm wrong. Even the time, like, he wrote the script under a pseudonym of Martin Quatermass, right? Yeah. And so that's like a little wink to that's 50s horror, I believe. Quatermass Experiment. Oh man, maybe I need to watch it again. I'm gonna watch it with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll just be like, you don't that nothing that doesn't do anything for you, and you're like,
I'll just be like,
hilarious.
No, it's not, so I don't think it's like hilarious or anything like that. But I thought that it had like a gore. A joy in gore kind of a tone. It seems like he's having fun. Like, this feels kind of like a fun movie to me, just to me. But I don't know. Let's see what else we got here that I can talk about. checking my notes here. Let's see. Quantum mechanics and religion.
Well, it's so funny to me because, again, I think I just read this on like Wikipedia or whatever that, you know, they gave Carpenter a $3 million budget and complete creative control, which is the only way you get Prince of Darkness, because had he not had complete creative control, there's no way that any studio head is like, yeah, what's your movie about the evil green liquid and quantum mechanics and theoretical physics and atomic theory, and like that never is making its way into any movie, much less a horror movie, from, you know, one of the biggest horror directors of the 1980s. But once again, so many of his movies, I think, were just too far ahead of their time. I mean, this movie made some money at the box office, not a ton, but it only cost $3 million. I think it made around 15, so it turned a profit, but like, so many of his movies underperformed upon theatrical release, and it wasn't until 10, 20 years later in a lot of cases. I feel like audiences really just started catching up to Prince of Darkness in the last 5 to 10 years, where people are finally looking at it and saying, oh, wait, shit, there's a lot going on here that's really, really good. And I bring this up every time we talk about Carpenter, but I keep wondering what his next, he may be out of underappreciated movies. It seems like I can't think of the expression that I'm trying to think of, but like the tide tends to turn on one movie at a time. So, I mean, it took a while for The Thing or Big Trouble in Little China or They Live. In the Mouth of Madness, I think, has fairly recently experienced this reappreciation.
It's the Scream Factory effect.
I mean, maybe, but is it, so it's a chicken egg scenario though. Is it because Scream Factory put it out and now people are seeing it and being like, oh wait, this is way better than I remember. Or is Scream Factory putting it out because audiences are like, hey, we need a really good version of Prince of Darkness or The Fog, or, you know, I mean, obviously they've done most of Carpenter's catalog at this point.
Yeah, they have. No, I think that it's – I was joking. Like, I think that it actually is because these movies are good. And though we had a different response to the horror of this movie, I really like this movie. I'm going to watch it a lot. I don't own it. I need to get it. I just rented it. But, like, I'm going through this thing where every time – like, I've always kind of taken Carpenter for granted. Like, I knew the movies. Halloween's a mainstay. You watch it every year. Some of the sequels, you know, like those are give or take, but the original is always like, you have to watch that every year. And then some of his other stuff, like Escape from New York, like I've been aware of that movie and have lived with that movie for at least 20 years. You just kind of take it for granted, but you're right. Like in the last 4 or 5 years, I don't know about 10 years for me, but like the last 4 or 5, every time I watch one of his movies, I'm like, this is a lot better than stuff that I thought was better than this. Like this rises to the top. And it's, though I still have movies of his that I haven't seen, I really am developing a relationship with his style and his aesthetic. Like you're talking about the music in this movie. Like it's, I don't know that there's like a theme that you're going to be humming to yourself, but it's distinct and it's distinctly John Carpenter. and it makes the movie, like, it gives it character. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it is, like, that's what he does. Like, there's no, you know, like, oh, that's such and such. That's the lady who sits up with the pizza faces theme. Like, there's not that. But it's undeniably John Carpenter, and it's awesome. So I don't know, like, I'm getting deeper into this and I'm appreciating him more and more. He's probably one of my top five directors, which I don't know if I should say since he has movies I haven't seen, but like, I really love what he does so much. Every time I watch one of his movies, I'm like, this is just the best. Now,
except for Prince of Darkness.
But I like this movie. See, that's the thing, that I like it for different reasons than you like it, but I like it a lot. 'Cause it's got a lot of, like, it's distinctly John Carpenter, just like his music. Like, it's got his tricks. It's got his, like, the way he shoots things, and I think it's got, like, a sly sense of humor, but it may just be me injecting that into the movie.
No, he definitely, I mean, I think a lot of people are going to hear this and side with you, because I think he's incapable of not having that humorous streak running through some of his work. He's just one of those guys who looks at the dark shit and tends to find the dark shit funny, and so he works a lot of that in. To me, the humor doesn't come through, but I think a lot of people are going to say, what are you talking about? Heath is completely right. There were weeks where I was falling asleep every night to the Prince of Darkness score, because I find it weirdly comforting. I just really love it.
It's better than Whale Song.
True. I would think, yeah, as a Western guy, that Carpenter would really be right up your alley because of how much his films owe to sort of that style. That's what, you know, one of the good things about internet film criticism, which in many ways is a garbage fire. And
I was going to say, at least there's one good thing.
Yeah, well, like, it is, you know, unfortunately, it has given rise to a lot of shit voices, and it has given rise to whatever people call film Twitter, which is apparently just people arguing about movies on Twitter. Recently, of course, we have learned it has given rise to men with just a tiny amount of power who quickly abuse that power to sexually harass and or assault women. There are so many bad things about internet film culture, but one of the positives, if I can find positives, is that I think it has, because of the kinds of people who maybe are drawn to internet film criticism, you know, myself among them, that we are, we tend to fixate on genre films, and I think it has helped not restore the reputation, but I think it has helped elevate the reputation of a filmmaker like John Carpenter, who I really honestly believe should be considered among the great American filmmakers of all time. And I don't think it's there yet in terms of sort of the mainstream, but I don't think there is much of a mainstream film criticism movement anymore. You know, there doesn't seem to be those sort of gatekeepers of, hey, we're the real deal and we look down on the online people. Like, I think that line has completely dissolved. Because
I think it has.
The online thing sort of is the thing now, you know. Even the print writers have now kind of moved to online or been laid off or whatever. So it's sort of the major game in town. And well, I'm sure there are plenty of old school critics who would laugh in my face for suggesting that Carpenter is one of the great all-time American filmmakers. I genuinely believe that. And I know that not every one of his movies is a home run. He made Memoirs of an Invisible Man. No one's perfect. but I truly think he's one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, when you back up and look at his work, you know, of a piece, they are, you know, like, one by one, they may not all stand up or meet the same criteria or the same level of quality. But when you step back and look at the whole thing, you know, even some of that 2000s stuff, like John Carpenter's Vampires, like, that's not a great movie. I really like that movie. That's actually probably top five Carpenter for me.
Interesting.
Yeah, right. That's right, Padre.
I feel like I would have a harder time watching that now because of my intense dislike for James Woods, even though I think he's terrific in that movie. I think he is that movie. You know, yeah. I think he's the best thing about that movie, but maybe in a few years. Just the sight of him disgusts me so much right now that I would have a hard time.
I don't know, man. It's like more and more these people, like, I'm like, I want to watch this, but I don't think I can. It's
right?
like more and more movie. Like, I'm like, how am I going to watch? How am I going to watch Miramax movies, man? Like
right?
Just the whole swath of Miramax movies that I loved from like 93 to like 97 that were critical in my, you know, like formulating my taste. Like, I can't go back and watch those things now.
Yep.
Anyway, when you step back for John Carpenter and just look at the whole thing, like, he's a great director, and there's like a through line. Like, and so maybe the people that one day talk or that used to talk about like Sturgis and Ford and stuff, like, they're dying, right? And like, we are the next generation that's stepping up and be like, well, we love Carpenter and we love Craven and we love Hooper, and it's these are our heroes. These are the guys who made the movies that like formed us, or at least I think so. So I think that he will be recognized if he's not already. I think that he will be, because he is one of a kind. Speaking of Carpenter, like, what about the album coming out? That'll be just like a few days from when this drops. You know what I'm talking about?
I thought so, but
John
maybe I don't.
John Carpenter Anthology comes out October 20th, and it's like him releasing like new recordings that he has done of like 16 of his themes.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
I have the first two. I can't get it on vinyl, goddamn.
I'll get it on cassette. You get it on vinyl. We'll compare.
I have his first two albums, and I like them quite a bit, so.
If I could find the internet on this device that I'm using, I would pull it up, but I can't. It's got, here, I'm going to look it up while I'm talking.
All right. I haven't even listened. I know he just released like a remix of the Halloween theme with Trent Reznor, and I haven't even listened to that because I'm a bad horror fan.
Yeah, I have, and I did not care for it.
Okay.
Good. I did not like it. It was just like, so if it's the one that I'm thinking of, it's like Trent Reznor and somebody else. And
instead Atticus Ross, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah. So instead of it being like, it's like, it's like somebody's like texting on their phone or something. This is not for me.
Honestly, the reason I didn't listen to it, and this is going to sound ignorant because I know we have friends and fans who are big, you know, Trent Reznor people, Alejandra Chief among them. She's obsessed with Trent Reznor. But like, I'm not a big remix guy just in any, you know, even when Carpenter then puts out remixes of some of the tracks on his albums have been remixes of tracks on the album. And I'm just not a remix guy at all.
Yeah, no.
So I like the Halloween theme. I'm fine with that. I can just listen to the Halloween theme. I don't need to listen to a remix of it.
Okay, so John Carpenter, and it's called Anthology Movie Themes. And it comes out October 20th, and it has, let's see, John Carpenter's a legend, blah, blah, blah. It is newly recorded versions of In the Mouth of Madness, Assault on Precinct 13, The Fog, Prince of Darkness, Santiago from Vampires, Escape from New York, Halloween, Porkchop Express from Big Trouble in Little China, They Live, The Thing, Starman, Dark Star, and Christine. Like, I gotta have it.
Yeah, for sure.
There's actually a music video for Christine that they just put up on YouTube recently, and it's awesome. It's I think they're just like note for note recreations of the original themes, but they're new, and they're him, and he's in the video.
Is it him like playing with his touring band?
I don't know.
Okay. You didn't go see him, did you?
No. I don't think he came anywhere close.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But I don't.
Well, he's on tour again. If you have an opportunity, I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Oh, I'll have to look into it.
Just honestly, like, it's the best just to watch him up there playing and having fun, and they sound great. But honestly, if for no other reason than because there's a giant screen behind him just showing clips from all the movies of the music he's playing. And every time, every new song and every new clip montage, I was just like, fuck, I got to go home and watch that. Oh, fuck. Now I got to go watch Christine. Ah, shit. I really want to watch The Fog. Like, every new movie they showed reminded me that, oh, fuck, I got to watch that movie again because I love it.
So, because he's awesome. And here's what's interesting to me is that we both had two completely different reactions to this movie, but we both like this movie. And I think that says something.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I don't know what my, you know, like, top five Carpenter would be, but I don't know, man. That's hard. He has so many good ones. I really feel like this would be in there. If nothing else, it has a permanent spot as like my dark horse for my top five. So maybe like these are my five, but the alternate, the one who's always the sixth man, if you will always be Prince of Darkness, because I revisit it more than a lot of his other movies.
Wow, that's really cool. No, that's awesome. Would you put The Fog in the top five, or do you like this more than The Fog, right?
I do like this more than The Fog. And again, I like The Fog a lot. I don't necessarily have problems with The Fog, but there's just something about this movie that grabs me, something about the vibe of the movie. It's that weird, inexplicable thing that we can't quite articulate. It's just kind of a vibe of this movie that speaks to me more than the vibe of The Fog. Even though I love the vibe of The Fog, I think more than I love The Fog, like more than I love any of the story or the characters or anything, I like the way the movie makes me feel.
And we're talking about the Tom Welling Fog, right?
Yeah. Wait. Yeah. Was there a different one?
No, I don't think so. No.
I still haven't seen the Tom Welling Fog.
So I watched it like out of 10 or 15 years. I don't think it's 15 years old, but I watched it when it was new.
Okay.
And I just picked it back up for $1 and I haven't watched it yet.
I think you overpaid.
I probably did.
I think it's like on Netflix and I still haven't watched it. I could watch it for nothing, but.
Well, it's like, why? Right.
Well,
like,
exactly.
It's like, why?
Right.
Like, why are you going to cover the Halloween song with Trent Reznor? Like, why? It's perfect to begin with. Why would you mess with it?
Right. Well, you know, again, the 2000s were a time where just every horror movie was being remade. And the whole reason that I would ever consider watching that Fog remake is because Selma Blair plays the Adrienne Barbeau role. And I like that casting. So, like, in theory, I'm into it. But that means having to watch the Tom Welling Fog, when really I could just watch Friday the 13th Part 2 for the 60th time.
And win.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. I will not regret that choice.
Yeah. You win at life.
Anything else about Prince of Darkness that you want to say?
Let me check here. I think that it's really cool that he has a repertoire of actors that he likes to work with. And that you know, like, there's no Kurt Russell in this movie, unfortunately. I think we all would have been a little bit better off with Kurt Russell instead of Jameson Parker. Sorry, Mr. Parker, wherever you are, but it's Kurt Russell, man.
Yeah.
But I like that he brings people back. Like, that's really cool. Let's see. What else? Do I have anything else? No, I think we pretty much covered it.
Yeah.
I thought that the water spraying out of everybody's mouth was, I thought it was really funny. It's like this, it's just this thin stream, like somebody's got a super soaker right by their face. And
it's like when Lardass like pukes in Stand By Me, right?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
It's that same sort of jet stream effect. I don't know, man. The shot where the blonde woman is laying in the bed and it's pouring down from the ceiling and she's like expanding, man, that is the stuff of nightmares.
More nightmare inducing than the Pet Sematary.
Nothing is more nightmare inducing than Zelda. Nothing.
Just checking.
There's still nothing scary. What is the scariest thing you've ever seen in a movie?
Oh,
like, for me, it's hands down Zelda.
I don't know.
You don't have, like, a go-to? Like, that's the scariest, or, like, the scariest movie you've ever seen? Is it Event Horizon?
It used to be. Oh, it might still be. I just feel like, you know what? Hey, maybe our podcast about that was so cathartic for me that I was able to let some of those demons go.
Perhaps.
And by demons, I mean Sam Neill humming the Jurassic Park theme while he's being flayed.
Somewhere I wish I could see the X-rated cut of that movie. And by that, I don't mean there's not like hardcore porn in it. I mean, it was a lot gorier, and I think it might have helped a little bit. I don't know. Like, not to say that I want to see more gore, but I think that level of intensity might have improved some areas of that movie that I think come up a little short, but whatever.
Interesting. This is probably, I'm not saying this because I just watched it, but rewatching The Thing, that is an effective little movie for me. Like the visuals and it's because it's all practical effects. And so there's like, you couldn't do it with CG. I know they remade the movie. Like you could not, that movie would not be what it is in a CG world. So like there, you podcasted about the thing, right? Haven't you done a podcast about that one?
Not for this movie, but I was on an episode of The Projection Booth talking about the thing.
I knew you talked about it somewhere. Yeah. There's like the scene where this guy's, he's laying on a table and like his head slowly starts falling back off the table. It's like so upsetting. That's so freaky to me. And it's like, it's there. Like it's not a computer thing. It's there. It's like stretching and snapping. That's pretty upsetting for me. It comes down to like what images are upsetting. I don't know. And Event Horizon, it always has freaked me out, but I don't know. I really do think like maybe we put some things to bed with that episode that we did.
Do you know what image upsets me the most in Event Horizon is the when it says directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. Such a stupid, cheap joke. No, The Thing, I think, is still Carpenter's best movie, and it's I think, one of the best horror movies ever made. So you will hear no argument from me about The Thing.
Sweet. Cool.
Well, this was awesome. Thank you for talking POD with me.
Yeah, hey man, you're in the South Town where that kid don't play. I don't think that's.
We had like 90 minutes to come up with one more POD reference, and we both failed.
You said Feel So Alive.
Yeah, right. I'm out. I feel like they had a song in the movie Blue Crush, but I don't know if I'm right about that.
Youth of the Nation. Youth of.
Yes! Holy shit. Youth of the Nation. Nice. I mean, I pulled them up, but I don't know. They've had a lot of members. I can't keep this all straight. Anyway, I hope everyone's looking up POD right now. Heath, where can people, besides your weekly column at F This Movie, Back to 1976, which has been awesome so far, remind everyone where they can find more of your stuff?
Well, that would be at serialatmidnight.com or on YouTube under the user Serial at Midnight. Just did a Stranger Things video today. Had a really interesting experience at Target picking up the Stranger Things Blu-ray set, and I talked about that on the video today. So, serialatmidnight.com.
Yeah, I want to talk about that Stranger Things release, but I'll wait till we're done recording because I don't want to step on getting people over to the video. You know, awesome. As always, you can find our stuff at fthismovie.com. We're on Twitter at fthismovie, Facebook, YouTube sometimes, Stitcher, iTunes. Rate and review the show if you haven't already. We appreciate it. And you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Scary Movie Month continues. We will have more podcasts and bonus podcasts coming for you all October long. Please continue to participate in the Scary Movie Challenge. 7-word review every time you watch a scary movie in the month of October. Thank you guys very much for listening. And thanks again, Heath.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on, and everybody out there.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.